Welcome to Startup Out of the Box with Vitor Domingos and Marco Silva.
On this episode, we'll discuss if startups are too focused now on tech rather than on business, if they should have a mobile app or a website, and finally, some tips.
Excellent.
So, Vitor, starting on this topic of if startups are too focused on tech rather than on business, what's your take on that?
Well, to be honest with you, what I see from a lot of new startups and companies is that they are classified by the technology that they're using at the moment. Let's say if I'm building something using Amazon, so I'm going to be an Amazon kind of shop, and I'm just going to do stuff on Amazon because all my technology is based there. Everything I do is going to be stored on Amazon, and I'm not going to see anything else on the market. So I'm being classified as some kind of Amazon startup that builds some kind of product. Mm-hmm. And when we compare with the past, actually, companies were classified by the type of business that they were building, right? Am I building something for consumers? Am I building something from business to business? It doesn't matter technology, because the technology will change throughout the years. And what I'm seeing, at least that's my kind of feeling. What I'm seeing right now is a lot of companies being defined by the technology that they are using at the moment, mm-hmm. and not by the business or the value that they're adding to business. What do you think?
Okay, in one point, on the Amazon side, for example, comparing to Amazon, Google, I see a lot of companies selecting Amazon or Google because, well, it's a way of standardize their operations. So it doesn't make life complicated for the developers. Like, okay, mm-hmm. instead of just going and learning different ways of different cloud providers, different use cases, like, okay, let's go for the one we think it's the best for us. So let's go for Amazon or Google. On the development side, that's really, let's say, a service provider. But I do see a lot of startups starting as a tech solution. Yeah, we have this tech solution. We are building something on top of Erlang because it's really fast. Mm-hmm. But at the end, it's like, but what's the real business situation that you're using? Okay, using Erlang, that's really nice. Or using Rust or Golang. But what's that tech giving you? What's that tech helping you to accomplish your business needs? Mm-hmm. And most of the times you see that these guys, they will give you a massive speech. Yeah, we have microservice architecture with everything deployed with Kubernetes and Golang and deployments automatically with CI/CD and X, Y, and Z. And we can auto-scale to support 1 million users. And then you ask them, yeah, that's amazing. That's like, wow, you guys built something really cool. Yeah. So how many users do you have? Oh, 10. So, explain me something. So, you've been focusing this last year building something for 1 million users, and we have 10 users. Don't you feel that there might be something wrong in that picture? Why don't you build something for 10 users, try to figure out what they want, what the need is? Like, is this really the right path to go? Because if you build something for 1 million users in 1 year, and you only have 10 users, I would say that there's something wrong in that picture.
It is. Yeah. But maybe we should have what you just said in another podcast. Because what I see is that when it comes to picking a technology and mm-hmm. scaling and trying to scale at first, there's a lot of companies that right now are using bleeding edge technology just for the sake of, we need to scale from day one. And actually, they don't. They need to build the product. They need to build a use case. They need to build something that people can actually develop and do something with it, rather than just, I'm going to have on day one 10,000 users or 10 million users. So I need to go to the best bleeding edge technology for programming and for development and for the best cloud platform. I'm not going to use these CPUs. I'm just going to use GPUs, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to use React with Redux with I don't know what, with Vue and Erlang and with Rust in the backend. Yeah, I saw one startup like that 2 or 3 weeks ago where they asked for developers and they mentioned the stack. None of the techs they mentioned in their stack is more than 1 year old. All of the stack is less than 1 year old. So I'm like, how the hell are you going to get developers for that? Once, like to start with. And two, once you get to problems, you're a startup. You don't have really those skills and that manpower to resolve that. So a big reason to use tech that's proven, let's say 5 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, is because it's easy to find solutions online. You go to Stack Overflow, you go to Google, and you can find an answer because someone else did it. For example, Spark. Yes, you have Spark now. You have Storm. You have Flint. You have some others. Another one that Twitter released. We in our side, yeah, we use Spark. We use Storm. Different things. And we did analyze Flint and some other of the tools that came out. Yeah, some of the other tools are faster than Storm, for example. But the community-wise size, it's minimal. So should I select a tool just because it's 5% faster, but as like 5% of the community that is that the biggest one? Well, since we're learning the technology, I prefer to go to one that gets a bit slower. It's more stable. It has a bigger community because if I know if I need help, it's going to be there.
Yeah, so you can. So it needs to be kind of a middle ground there. So you need to have someone that you can find with experience to actually help you through solve your problems, either on the community or someone that you can hire that can actually have that kind of experience and bring you to the, and bring him or her back to the team. The thing is. I can give you the reverse of the coin, which is when I had my own mobile company, we spent a lot of time developing against the Android platform, because we thought that will be the trigger for people to actually use apps on mobile phones. And actually, it was the opposite. So there was a lot of the user community around iPhone was greater than the one from Android. So that was kind of, we choose the wrong kind of marketplace and back-end technology, well, front-end technology. But the thing is, we haven't used anything more specific to construct a website or a prototype or something like that. It was two complete opposite technologies for mobile development. I think that,
your experience was quite interesting because when your startup was starting, when you guys built it, it was the beginning of the end for Nokia. So at that time, Nokia feature phones were the thing, and it was, you could already, at that point, you could install apps on Nokia. So they were talking about Java applications, Java mobile applications that we could install on Nokia. So that was Nokia was the king at that time. Android appeared kind of at the same time as the iPhone, first iPhone. So it was kind of an interesting mix. So you had companies that would look at the iPhone and think, yeah, this is a fad. We're not going to care about that. We're going to just focus on Java Mobile. Mm-hmm. Android came out. So it was kind of like the war between three platforms, the two newcomers and the company that was there. Well, Mark, sort of.
Because back then, we thought that actually the companies and developers that were doing stuff for G2ME, so we're talking about Nokia phones, Samsung, lower-hand phones, they would pretty much transition from the J2ME to Android. Because the back end, well, the application was pretty much Java. They need to adapt to some libraries. They need to recompile the application again. But the application, the game, were already there. They can transition that to Android easier. But actually, what we saw is that it doesn't matter how many developers you had from that community and how many applications you had. It depends on the user that's going to use it and he's going to pay for that. So what we saw with the iPhone was actually, well, it's going to be a smaller user community, but they have a lot of money to spend on applications and they can easily install and use applications on that specific platform. Mm-hmm. And when we compare that to Android, we always see that the Android community could have more developers because there were more people doing stuff on Java than on the platform for iPhone. Now it's Swift.
The first iPhone, it was when it was released the first month, it was their idea was web, and then they released the SDK on Objective-C.
Yeah, Objective-C. That's right. Exactly. So again. I think that the my tip here is look at your user platform, the people that actually are going to use the platform, and develop for that platform, develop for them, and probably not focus on just one technology. Yeah. Just try to look at the broader scale of technology and try to mingle them and use The most stable platform where you can actually hire or get some experience with it.
Yeah, so that goes to the thing, like, first focus on the users, then, well, because that's your business. Then from there, figure out what's the platform you want to be in, and then the developers, and then the technology, because that's going to be it. And you still see a lot of companies starting as like, okay, users, technology, then something else. Maybe the business.
Or just technology, users, and then business. So,
or well, if you develop in front end, like this week I'm going to do React, next week I'm going to do Angular 5, next week I'm going to do Vue, next week I'm going to do... Okay, I'm already lost. I already lost how many frameworks came out last year for JavaScript, because... Yeah. And did you feel the... Well, I would say like 10 years ago, the development environment was quite slower than today. But do you see today, at least in your ecosystem, because you're in a more enterprise environment now, in startups, we have the joke that there's always a new framework and new stack coming out every week. And there's always the joke of, well, if it's front-end, someone is going to learn how to do a new thing. Like, let's rewrite our entire platform in the new stack. So you have a huge churn on technology. So you do see a lot of developers get burned out because of that. Because now I'm learning one technology, next month I'm learning another technology, and everyone's just changing for... no reason whatsoever. In the enterprise side, what's your input into it? Because I know that the general conception is enterprise is completely the opposite, but from you as an insider, what would you say?
Well, I think it's changing. That's the kind of general perception that people have from bigger enterprises, is that they're using quite old technology. But again, it depends on the kind of market that you're talking about. If you go to the financial services, yes, they use a lot of old technology. If you go to companies that actually deal with users, with end users, they can use bleeding edge. But from the company that I work for at the moment, we have the mix of both. And mostly because we want people that can actually, that we can hire, can have that kind of experience, that we can put on projects with clients and actually... help them build and achieve their project. It's really hard to find someone with experience on the bleeding edge technology that can understand business, that can deal with clients, that can build things with responsibility. We are not a startup. We are an enterprise. We're here to make money. So we are kind of keen on hiring people that have that kind of experience. So, as I said, we have a blend of the two, of getting really old kind of mainframe-ish technology and COBOL and that kind of stuff, but then also modern apps for phones and tablets and IoT and that kind of stuff. And I think that the more traditional companies that we see on the market and the more consulting companies that that already exist, they are doing this kind of transition. Mostly because of clients want to do the digital transformation. They want to transform whatever they have into something easier, getting into new technology, reaching out faster to customers and clients. And they force the enterprises at least to adapt to the market and get and respond to this kind of need.
Okay.
Which brings me to the second subject of today. Which is mobile apps or websites. So we just started that kind of discussion with going back to the first days of the iPhone. There were a lot of web applications, web-based applications. Then they just moved to the standalone kind of apps. And now we have, I would say, two major platforms, right? We have the one on Android, and have the other one on iPhone for mobile apps. We're not seeing a lot of websites developed for mobile usage or tablet. People just go to the standalone application and they build the app. Is this really useful? Do you think that we need to go into that kind of path just to achieve, I don't know, what, more responsiveness, more speed, more what, more user interface? Or can we just pick one global platform and just develop against that?
Okay, so going from now from the users. So nowadays, most users are used to that. They are used to look, grab the phone, go to the App Store, and look for something. So on that point, I would say now most companies would need, depending on their business model, but most of them would need an app to sell their services or because of the product that they provide. But I would say, yeah, if you're talking about like a council, a city hall, the government, yeah, maybe having an app doesn't make really sense because it's mostly information. It, like gov.uk, it's a website, doesn't really need an app, but the website is already responsive. It works on your mobile phone and people understand, okay, it's something different than app. It's really not a product I want. It's more information. So they would go to the website. So on that point, I would say, yeah, depending on your product, yeah, you would need an app or not. That would, but whatever the purpose, whatever the company you're starting, you always need your website to be responsive, to work on mobile devices, to work on tablets, to work on desktops. So that would be kind of rule number one nowadays. You can't really think, oh, I'm just going to make a website for my laptops. Well, look at the web traffic for mobile devices. It's growing insanely. You have, for example, comparing to Facebook, I think the last numbers from Facebook was 60 or 70% of their users were mobile devices. Look at people at their homes. Most people I know that are really not techies, they don't really use their laptop much that anymore. It's more like their iPhones, their tablets, that's what they use. They only use their laptops if there's a specific reason for it.
Sorry, but on the other hand, you have Microsoft, right? And Microsoft, they decided that they should be mobile. Well, pick one, mobile, cloud first, whatever first that they have at the moment. But it should be cloud and mobile first.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Office applications, they develop Office for mobile phones, so for Android and iPhone, which is, and they are quite good. They also work on the iPads and they work flawlessly.
And the iPad version is really good.
It is, but they also have the web versions, and the web versions, they are very, very good, and they are very responsive. They have pretty much all the features there, so it's even better than Google Docs when you look at it. So they invest a lot of effort and a lot of money into building something that people could do on tablets, they could do on mobile phones, on any platform. They spend a lot of time developing that. And I wasn't expecting that because we know Microsoft and we know we are used to the kind of client server type of application, right? You need to install something locally. You need to install Office 365, the whole package to do something. But right now they invest a lot of money and a lot of effort into building this kind of ecosystem apps that should work on any kind of device, on any kind of platform.
Yeah, Microsoft is one of the examples to follow nowadays, in my opinion. They have been changing a lot of the mentality, considering after the exit of Steve Ballmer. And for me, it's quite interesting to see their path. And they are the company to follow nowadays. In tech, in our users, okay, they continue to have the bad reputation because of Windows. But business-wise, I think they are going the correct path. And one of the things like they did, okay, they decided to focus. Like, we don't care about where you use our product. Our product is available in any platform, and I think that's one of the best plays they could have done. That's a complete opposite to what Apple is doing.
Yeah.
While Google doesn't really count because Google is purely web. They don't have applications for you to install, so you have a browser, you can use Google, whatever application that Google provides you, including Hangouts, Gmail, Docs, whatever. But that also then brings to the last point that you mentioned before, like what then should be people be building on? So should it be building natively, web, whatever? So a couple of years ago, we decided to build a financial app using the hybrid model. So JavaScript, HTML, CSS. It was a few parts done in native code. And this was exactly like what Facebook was doing a couple of years ago. So my advice is, if your application is mostly reading data, posting data, so stuff that's quite light on your network connection and light on your mobile device, go hybrid, because then you can use that responsiveness for your mobile website or your Android and your iPhone app. Okay, you have to worry about the user interaction because it's different in each device.
Yeah,
but the hybrid gives you some help to develop for the free platforms at once. But if your application requires a bit more processing, like charts or image processing, video, what it, like GPS. So it will require more CPU. It will require more network data. Go native. It will give you the best native experience. It will give you the best performance out of the device. And nowadays, users are more picky on it. You can notice when you can open, that's a really complex application that's built in a hybrid way for iPhone. You kind of look at it, it's like, this doesn't feel right. The animations are slow. The transitions, the input text doesn't feel right. And users will notice that and they will complain about it. Yeah. Users now are a bit more picky on that side.
It is. And going back to your point of when you're starting to develop something, it reminds me of that that picture of how to build an MVP, right?
Yeah, that's the next point, the MVP.
Exactly. So it's not building small parts of it for each platform. It's building a complete product that could work in one specific platform and then start from there. So we're going to put this on the links for people to see. But we're talking about that kind of image where you can you have the idea of building a car. So that your MVP is, I don't know, building put the wheels, put the engine, put the doors, put the chassis, and then have the car. Or just build I don't know, a motorcycle or a bike, and then go to I don't know, some two wheels something, then three wheels, then four wheels, then you have your full car, because you started a small product that could work for people to use and not just parts of it. So that's kind of suggestion that probably we can leave here for developers, is to start build something that could actually work on one specific platform. Start from there, right?
Yeah, and don't make it crap. I think there's this problem in people that have this when they think about MVPs, they think, oh, we can make it crap, users won't care about it. No. If you, the purpose of the MVP, okay, you make one feature and that feature has to be good. Because users nowadays will open your app, if it's crap, they will never install it again. It doesn't matter if like 10 years later, if they survive 10 years, they're lucky.
Yeah.
But 10 weeks later, you have more features, it's better, like usable thing. Yeah, last time I installed it, it was shit. So the purpose of the MVP is like, make one feature and make it really good and make your users engaged to it.
Yeah.
Then add more features to it.
Exactly. So it will be like Tesla, right? They started with a two-seat car. They then went to four seats, seven, and now they have the truck. They're building space shifts and stuff like that. So build a full product for that specific market and start adding features and capabilities to that.
Yeah.
So, and then we can talk about the other theme, which is how people will actually plan how to develop those things. And going back to the first point of our conversation, which is people should think about business, they also should have a plan around that kind of business, right?
Yes. Oh, one of the worst things I hate about startup mentality is these people that say, like, I have a startup, it's not a business. Ooh, I have to breathe like 5 or 6 times before I'll take them seriously. And they're like, no, dude, like the conversation has ended. Yeah, sorry. If you have a startup, you have a business. There's no point of saying like, oh no, this is not a business. This is a startup. So that's a side project. That's not a startup. If you have employees, if you have to think about salaries and money, it's a business. So you have to really think about it. You can't use that excuse and then, oh, 1 year later, yeah, we had to close the startup. We couldn't get any money. Well, no shit. If you thought it wasn't a business,
So, and well, we're talking about probably the best way to start planning your business is picking up the lean canvas, right?
Yep.
So,
really good.
You can map exactly where you can map the problem, the solution, the market, the competitors, the price that you're going to put on top of your product,
the value proposition.
Exactly. So you have everything segmented and so that you can actually put some effort and put some thought into it and plan things properly, and also so that you can have a discussion with other people when they start asking you what the hell do you do, what does this startup does, what kind of product are you building, what's going to be your market, how are you going to monetize it. Have that kind of discussion internally within your co-founders and start thinking about having that kind of plan. Whiteboard it, put it a bit of effort into it, and plan things out at first.
Yeah, it's not, hey, look at this cool technology, let's build something with it and let's see what happens. Yeah, that can work sometimes, but most of the times, really, no. It's just a nice weekend project, and that's it.
Exactly. So blend the whole thing. And Sam Altman, one of the Y Combinator's founders, they so he has. We're going to put this as a link. He has a link that has some tips for creating a startup step by step. So how to pick a founder, how to pick things on a startup, do the lean startup canvas, build an MVP, all of those kind of discussions and pretty much what we're discussing now. Sam Altman has this into an interesting article that we're going to put here also on YouTube and for people and for to read. That's kind of my first recommendation. For people that actually are listening to us.
Yeah, and following Sam Altman, there's also a course that Sam Altman did in partnership with the Stanford University. So it's also how to create a startup. I can't remember the name, but I'll put the links. And it's 10 or 12 lectures. So we invited each lecture. He invited a founder from one startup from Y Combinator to give that presentation. And so each lecture is about maybe about customer engagement, how to do finances, how to create the company, how to deal with equity, how to deal with the first employees. So it's quite interesting in that perspective because it's each lecture is one around 1 hour and it's one founder telling about their experience on that subject.
That's really good.
Of course, some parts are focused on the American market, but you can get a still amount of knowledge out of it.
Yeah. So the other suggestion or the recommendation that we can do is about, and I need to open this now. I should have planned this previously. So it's the tips that it's the top trending 10. It's the 5 trends to avoid when founding a startup. And we can see that first is avoid venture capital, which is quite interesting. So if you're doing a startup, probably you should look at the 3 Fs, the family, the fools, and the friends, right? For kind of investment. The other one is don't think about scaling immediately and hypergrowth and having a growth hacker into the team and that kind of stuff. Start probably small and build that kind of MVP and capabilities into your product. And the next ones, let me see. Try to be like a family. Don't try to be like a family. We are building a business. We should focus on the business. We should focus on the product. And sometimes we shouldn't be all friends, right? Because we are doing our job. That's kind of one of the trends to avoid. The last two is, which is attempting to productize a PhD thesis, which is a good one. So try to avoid that. Try to go into academia, probably, right? Don't you think? And the last one is hiring a bunch of academic researchers. So avoid that. Just build something that actually people can use and they are keen on using it, right?
Yeah. Regarding the VC one, I think that's a thing that most people jump to, but they don't realize that it's not free money. No one gives you money for free. Yeah. And if you go the VC route, be careful, read every single paper that they give you to sign. Be really careful about it. Ask the advice of a lawyer or people that already done that before, because they can give you some insights if the deal is going to screw you or not, and what power you're giving to the VCs that you didn't know about.
Assume that they will always screw you, because it's their money and they want it back. Right?
And then regarding the scaling, a good example for me for that is Basecamp for old 37 Signals. They are one of the biggest outspokers against the VC culture in Silicon Valley. Because of that culture of you have to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, all that stuff, and you have to go upper growth and all that. And you're talking about Basecamp. It's a company that's doing around $300 million a year, I think. Mm-hmm. They have around 40 or 50 employees worldwide. They work 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy. And they decide, like, we are not VC funded. We are purely bootstrapped. We decided to go slowly. build the product step by step, what our customers wanted and needed,
mm-hmm.
and give our employees the best conditions we can. There you go. We don't need to go crazy and hire 200 people and just hire who you need for what you need.
And hyperscale and plan for hyperscale on day one, right?
Yes, of course.
All right.
Okay. Well, excellent. That's all from our side today.
It is. So thank you for listening to us and watching also on YouTube. This was Startup Out of the Box. Do follow us on iTunes, on TuneIn, and also on YouTube. Yep. Cheers.
Bye. And and if you want to send us a note, Twitter, @VD or @HiGamma, and we want to hear your opinions.
Exactly. Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.